This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
And the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. Tomorrow, the New Hampshire House votes on a bill backers say would have huge public health benefits by allowing needle exchange programs. These are centers where IV drug users can turn in dirty needles for clean ones. The immediate goal is to reduce the risk of infection and the spread of illnesses like AIDS and hepatitis C. And there's a larger goal as well. Needle exchanges can also serve as a first point of contact for addicts where they can get help lining up drug treatment. 36 other states now have some type of needle exchange program, and Congress has just lifted its prohibition on federal funding for them. But while there's general support for these in New Hampshire, some lawmakers have concerns about the specific proposal at hand. That's because this bill says addicts could return dirty needles with trace amounts of drugs left inside, an approach that law enforcement fears would hurt its efforts to go after drug dealers. Today in The Exchange, debating needle exchanges, and let's hear from you. Your questions and comments are welcome at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can always find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests for the hour. Joining us from Vermont is Laura Byrne. She's Executive Director of the HIV-HCV Resource Center, which runs a needle exchange program in White River Junction, Vermont, with some clients crossing the river from New Hampshire to access her services. And Laura Byrne, good to have you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Also with us in studio, Chief Andrew Shigori, Tufton and Borough Police Chief and second VP for the New Hampshire Association of Chiefs of Police. And Chief Shigori, it's good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Representative Joe Hannon, Republican from Lee. He's a member of the Joint Task Force for the Response to the Heroin and Opioid Epidemic, and he's sponsor of HB 1681, which would, as I said, legalize needle exchange programs. And Representative Joe Hannon, it's good to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, and I want to start with you since it's your bill we're talking about. And just real broadly, please, Representative Hannon, before we get into the details, for a long time, the argument against needle exchanges was, why would we encourage people, help people to take drugs? How do you feel about that broad concern?
I think it's a valid concern, and it's something that I actually was very concerned about myself when I first started looking into this. I'm one of the last people you would find that wants people to do more drugs. I mean, I don't even drink. I've been clean and sober myself for over 24 and a half years. This week, it'll be 9,000 days without a drink. So, I've been working with people in, at a personal level in the recovery community for more than half my life. I know that I've seen people, friends and people I've met in 12-step and recovery programs who have died because of this disease. And one of the most horrible things I've seen is the fact that people get sick, and even if they do get their lives back together, they're still stuck with these horrible diseases. And the numbers of people that get hepatitis C and B and other problems is staggering. When I first started working as a resident, as a foot and ankle surgeon, and I was training in North Philadelphia, the number of infections that I would see just from people using these in just the lower extremities that I was working with was amazing. It was one of the biggest heroin areas in the East Coast, where the hospital I was working in was. And this is something that New Hampshire's hasn't really gotten ready for yet. We don't have any syringe exchange programs. There was a former state representative, Cecilia Kane, who started in 1991 to get the current law passed. That it didn't pass until 2000. It took her about 9, almost 10 years to pass a law that allowed up to 10 syringes to be obtained without a prescription in a pharmacy. And that was 16 years ago that passed. So this has been going on for over about 25 years or more.
Well, and I forgot to mention that you are a doctor.
Yes.
Trained as a podiatrist. So you've seen people come in who have illnesses, infections, hepatitis C or whatever, from using using drugs?
Yeah, I have. And also my wife is an emergency room physician at a very large hospital in the state, and she sees more overdoses than probably most people in this state.
Wow.
This is something that we talk about daily. If a week goes by where she doesn't get an overdose death or a few shifts go by without an infection, that's a big deal. This is something that hepatitis C is a non-reportable disease in this state. It's something I wish we could change sooner, and that'll be one of the first things I do if I come back as a representative next term. But almost every state in the country reports hepatitis C infections to the state, so we know how many there are and what's going on. We don't do that here, even after the incident at the Exeter Hospital with the hepatitis problem there. We still haven't done anything about that.
So to that broad concern of, why should we make this safer and easier for
right.
folks to take drugs, you would say, yeah, I don't like it, but it's out there, so let's just deal with it?
Well, it's not even a matter of making it easier for people. They're already doing it. This has been shown that it doesn't increase the number of people using drugs. It doesn't bring new users in. It does keep the current users alive and healthier longer. So if your goal is to let them die and get sick, yes, this is counterproductive to that goal. But if we want to get people, and not just the addicts, if this was only about the addicts, this would be a much shorter conversation, because there are so many people out there that say, oh, why are we using Narcan? Let them overdose. I mean, this is some pretty serious things that people say sometimes, and this is not uncommon. And the same thing with syringes. Oh, maybe if they were afraid of getting HIV and hepatitis, they won't use. Well, that's not the case. I've spoken to dozens and dozens of people who have been in these situations and have had this disease and are now in recovery. And there are several. We had one testify that he knowingly shared a syringe with someone he knew had hepatitis C.
Wow.
That's where the disease took him.
Because he's so addicted.
Because at the time he was. He's several years clean right now, and he's doing amazing work in the state. But people like that who are in that situation can't get access to clean needles. So it's not a matter of enabling. It's a matter of harm reduction and disease prevention, because they're not the only ones that get affected. There were over 200 mothers born in the Manchester area with addiction. And that means that their children were probably addicted or exposed to these diseases. And if between 30 and 70% of these IV users are hepatitis C positive, and the numbers can be higher, but we're not really sure about New Hampshire specifically, those babies and children are exposed to these diseases. So if you don't care about the addict, care about the family, the children, the first responders that are exposed to and the healthcare workers are exposed to people with disease.
All right. Well, and we'll get into the details of your bill in a couple minutes.
Yes.
But on the broad question, and I'll throw it to you next, Laura, here's a Facebook comment that came in last week from Caroline on the idea of needle exchanges. Caroline says, well, first you're going to revive them with Narcan. Now you're going to give them needles. She says, talk about encouragement. When do you start handing out the heroin for free or actually on the taxpayer's dime? Caroline says she's disgusted. What about this broad concern, Laura? Why make this bad behavior safer and easier?
Well, I think that because opioid addiction is an addiction, it's an uncontrollable behavior, and people are going to use needles whether or not there are syringe exchanges, and they need access to resources. And syringe exchanges are what we do the most at our syringe exchange is help people overcome addiction. Yes, we try to keep them safe, and we try to prevent HIV and hepatitis transmission, but we also work in overdose prevention. We have a counseling program, referrals to treatment. That is what syringe exchanges do, and I think that there people can be helped, and that we should, I think it's our duty to try to help them.
Well, and that's often an argument that you hear, that just the act of coming into a center, can turn into that magic moment, Laura, when an addict says, look, I don't want to do this anymore. How often do you see that?
I see that all the time.
Really?
Nobody who is deep into drug dependence, like most of our clients are, they all wish they hadn't started. There's just no question that they would like to not be using those drugs. And if we can find ways to help them do that, I think that we should do that.
Chief Shigori, just broadly, and again, we'll get into some of the concerns that I know you have about Representative Hannon's bill, but just broadly, how do you feel about needle exchange programs?
I think needle exchange has a place in obviously mitigating some of the hazards of their behaviors. And I don't think we have an opposition necessarily to those kinds of hazard reduction process. But it gets into the details of it as to why we have concerns about this bill and how they're administered.
What are you seeing in terms of drug addiction in your community? We were talking before the show, Tuftonboro, it's such a lovely town, the Lakes region, you know.
Fortunately, we're kind of luckier than a lot of other areas. We don't have some of the – but just neighboring us, we've had overdose deaths. We've had one overdose death recently over the last year. We've seen – I know of people in town that are addicted and having problems trying to kick their habits. I've had their children, families split up because of it. It has an effect in a lot of different ways. People can't hold jobs. They are committing crimes to support their habits. Families get split up. It's very divisive. We have gone to training on Narcan. We carry Narcan. I'm looking at the PARI program, the Police Assisted Addiction Recovery Initiative, which started in Gloucester. We're not going to necessarily follow the Gloucester model, but I know Moultonboro has gone to it, adopted that. Sandwich has adopted it. So there's a few communities in our area. Berlin has adopted it. It's another avenue to get people in to get the help. And I agree. I don't think anybody wants to be addicted to this stuff. They want help, but they can't always get there through their own means. So, but the concerns with needle exchange becomes, how is it going to be administered? How is it going to be run? Is it going to be controlled in any way so that we know that it's going to have the outcomes that's possible out of them?
Well, let's talk about some of those concerns. And let me just remind our listeners that you can join us as well. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook, like Caroline did. I have a couple other Facebook comments, too, that I'll share with you all in a moment. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, or again, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So, Chief Shigori, since you mentioned it, what concerns do you have about this particular proposal? You said, in general, needle exchange programs could work, but what specifically are you worried about?
Well, this doesn't set any guidelines for needle exchange programs. This bill only talks about legalizing the possession of needles with trace amounts. If you look at other states that have these programs, there's actual bills that enable it and give control to health departments so that they have some guidelines that are set for them. Vermont, for example, you can only possess the needles as part of that program. And so there's actual exchange necessary in many of these programs. This just says you can possess needles with drugs, residual amounts of drugs in them for any person, any place, any reason, which is not necessarily an exchange program.
Well,
it enables the programs, but it's not setting up guidelines for it, which is what other states have.
So other states, and Representative Hannon, I'll turn to you too, but still want to hear from you too, Chief Shigori and you, Laura Byrne. So your bill, from what I understand, would, as Chief Shigori is saying, not set up a state-run needle exchange program. It would allow nonprofits to come in and run these things. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. And why take that approach?
Well, for several reasons. One, we're in the middle of a crisis right now, some people say. And I know that every program and bill that goes through in this state takes a long time. When I first came up with this idea last summer, I was telling people, and they said, oh, that's a great idea. Maybe in 5 or 6 years, you'll get it passed. The other thing is we've seen things like the medical marijuana facilities, and that bill was passed several years ago, and we still haven't had one open up. I don't want to get into that debate right now, but that's how New Hampshire works sometimes. It doesn't happen overnight. If I put in a bill to specifically do exchanges, and especially if I put one in to fund them, I know it would never have passed. There's no doubt in anyone's mind that if I put a funding bill and said the state is going to pay for needles for addicts, nobody would be in favor of this bill, or very few. The fact that it's allowing nonprofits, private individuals, One person, one of the biggest complaints I had when I first presented this bill, I was talking to a chief who spoke in opposition of the bill at the very beginning. They said, well, your bill would I said the biggest complaint was drug dealers could sell or give away clean needles with their heroin. And this chief told me, well, that would be the best thing that they did all day. They'd be willing to give them a reduced sentence if they could, because now they're doing something, at least something, to prevent some of the harm that is being caused.
The spread of the disease.
The spread of the disease. They're already getting the heroin. It's not like they can't get it. Heroin's real easy to get. Needles are easy to get. Getting clean needles. But the key is getting rid of them. The number one barrier to safely disposing them is the fear of arrest for having a non-usable or residual amount in a syringe.
So let's talk about that and just walk folks through, because, again, some people aren't familiar with how this works. So let's say an addict, you know, finishes, you know, getting his or her fix, and there's a little bit of fentanyl or heroin left in that needle. You're saying, Representative Hannon, right now, if he or she turn that in, they would be – possession of that needle with a tiny bit of drugs left in it is a criminal offense. So there'd be – no incentive for that person to go to a needle exchange center.
Well, they can't do it. It's a felony to possess any amount, even if it's a minuscule or microscopic amount. If they send it to the lab and find out there's a trace amount or a residual amount, that is the same charge. It's up to 7 years in prison for the first offense, and I believe 15 years for a second offense, just for having the dirty needle. Now, I keep hearing some of the people that are opposed to this say, well, we have to be able to use seeing a needle. That might be the only thing that gets an arrest. That might be the only thing that gets us a search warrant. Well, there are over 2 billion needles used a year in this country by diabetics and people with other medical conditions legally. So if someone has a diabetic needle in their car seat, would that be subject to a search warrant? Would that be probable cause for a search? You know, that's a really scary thing to consider, that just because you have a needle, even though most needles in this country are used legitimately by private individuals, that we're going to use that to arrest people.
So, Laura, how do you do it in Vermont then?
Well, we have our exchange in Vermont. My office is technically in New Hampshire, and we opened our exchange in 2006 in Vermont simply because the laws were more favorable. But what our New Hampshire clients do is that they often bleach their used needles when they bring them back to the exchange, and that way if they are stopped by law enforcement in New Hampshire, there won't be drug residue on the ends of their needles.
So the people from New Hampshire who use your service, Laura, bleach their needles before they come over the river to Vermont to return them?
Yes, some of them do.
What about in Vermont, in terms of addicts living in Vermont? Can they turn in needles to you with a tiny bit of fentanyl or heroin or something left in them?
Yes, they can. So usually what we do is when people come to the exchange, we give them a card that has a unique identifier. And if they were to be stopped by law enforcement on their way to the exchange with used needles, they would show their card to law enforcement and they would be allowed to go to the exchange and return their used needles.
Okay, so they have a card that says, you know, I'm in this program and so I'm legit, so to speak, Laura.
They do.
And by the way, we talked about, you know, whether these should be state-run or state-managed or just allow nonprofits to come in. Again, what's the Vermont example?
Well, the Vermont syringe exchanges are state-run and they're state-funded, although we do all get other funding as well. And they're all state-run.
What do you think? Oh, go ahead, Laura. Yeah.
Oh, I was just saying I agree with Representative Hannon, though. I think it's critically important to get these services out to people that are dying from overdoses right now. So the fact that New Hampshire hasn't really stepped up to offer state-run exchanges, somebody has to do it, and I appreciate the nonprofits that are headed that way.
Chief Sigouri, we're heading into a break, but very quickly, would you feel better if these were state-run?
I don't know if I feel better if they're state-run. I don't think that's necessary so much as guidelines and oversight by the state to make sure that the training meets certain requirements, that they go through a certain process for where they're going to be cited. Do you want them next to a school? Could they be where the addicts actually need them? Or, you know, I think that's where the state role is in an oversight, not necessarily running it or funding it, but just setting the basic guidelines as to what it should be include, especially like the training and safety of the employees or volunteers.
All right. We'll talk a lot more in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, needle exchange programs, how they work, and the debate over how and whether they should come to the Granite State. We want you to call in. Your questions and comments are welcome at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Laura Byrne is with us for the hour. She's executive director of the HIV-HCV Resource Center, which runs a needle exchange program in White River Junction, Vermont, just over the border from New Hampshire. And as she told us earlier, she sees a fair bit of clients from the Granite State. With us in studio, Chief Andrew Shigori, Tufton Borough's police chief, second VP for the New Hampshire Association of Chiefs of Police. And also with us, Representative Joe Hannon. He's a Republican from Lee. He's a member of the Joint Task Force for the Response to the Opioid Epidemic. He's also a sponsor of the bill that would legalize needle exchange programs here in New Hampshire. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Joining us now on the phone is Representative John Thal. He's a Republican from Whitefield, chairman of the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee. He also serves on the Governor's Commission on Alcohol and Drug Abuse Prevention. And Representative Thal is a former state police sergeant. And Representative Thal, welcome back to The Exchange. Good to have you.
Good to be back, Laura.
Well, from what I understand, your committee deadlocked on this needle exchange issue just recently. Can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, basically what happened was we had a few disagreements on the bill itself. We had a few members that weren't there because of reasons that they had of their own for either prior commitments or something. And the bill came out basically 7-7.
What were some of the concerns, Representative Thal, that the seven opposed had?
Well, basically, it was the fact that while the most of the testimony we heard was about hepatitis C and AIDS and other things, that there's nothing in this bill that really creates a needle exchange. All it does is decriminalize the possession of what they call an unusable amount of drugs. Now, unusable isn't even defined in statute, so you don't know how much that would be or anything else. And while many of us agree that maybe a needle exchange would be a good idea, a lot of us feel basically that this gives false hope to people who think they're going to be helped by this bill, because in most cases you're not going to have private people or organizations setting up a needle exchange throughout the state. You might find one in Manchester or Nashua or in Concord or Portsmouth, but up in the North Country, there's obviously not going to be much of anything.
Well, and Representative Hannon is here, and I'll definitely ask him about that concern. For you, though, Representative Thal, right now, would you be in favor of a needle exchange law if it were written a little bit differently?
Yeah, I like Vermont's needle exchange law. I think it's a step in the right direction. I also agree with Chief Shigori that it doesn't have to be run by the state, as long as there are guidelines in place that are placed there to make it work.
What is it about Vermont's approach, Representative Thal, that you like?
Well, it doesn't remove the penalty for possession of a dirty needle if the people aren't willing to get into a needle exchange. Now, I will admit that, in my opinion, the penalty for possession of a needle with a small amount is a little draconian. It's a little too high, in my opinion. It was enacted, I believe it was back probably 10 years ago or more. But I think that needle exchanges are a good idea. I just don't believe that this bill is going to do it. I don't believe it's going to stop anything.
Because it doesn't set established guidelines for these being put statewide, or because it doesn't guarantee that providers will come in? Is that it, Representative Thal?
Yeah, it's both of those.
Well, just last question for you. In a perfect world, what would you like to see on this issue of needle exchanges and, you know, trying to stop the spread of hepatitis C and AIDS and so forth?
Well, like I said, I would really like to see people get in to get treatment. And if getting into a needle exchange will help them get started towards treatment, that's the thing that I would like to see, instead of winding up with people dying all over the state in large numbers. I mean, even small towns are losing people. The small town that I'm I'm the acting chief of police, and has lost two people, and there's only 900 people in the town.
Wow. Well, Representative Thal, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Representative John Thal, again, a Republican from Whitefield, chair of the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee. He also serves on the Governor's Commission on Alcohol and Drug Abuse Prevention, Treatment, and Recovery. And all of you, I'm getting a sense, Representative Hannon, that everybody's kind of on the same page in terms of needle exchanges, that they might be a good idea for New Hampshire. 36 other states have them. But it seems like there's some big concerns with this bill, that it's not specific enough. And I wonder what you think.
No, it's great that everyone's come around to the idea of needle exchanges. That became much more of a popular position once they realized this was probably going to pass. It was unanimously passed by the Health and Human Services Committee. And then it would have had more votes in the Criminal Justice Committee. There were a couple people who were going to vote for it that had to leave before they were able to vote in the afternoon. So I agree that I'm glad that Representative Thal brought up the fact that, and these are his words, this is a draconian penalty for possession of an unusable amount. And it's actually unconstitutional according to our New Hampshire state constitution. Article 18 says penalties are to be proportioned to the offenses, the true design of punishment. We have to have basically the punishment must fit the crime. And if the crime is having something in your possession that, you want to make someone healthier. This is not increasing drug use. We've seen tons of studies. The evidence is overwhelming that increased access does not lead to more usage. The cards in Vermont that they use that Representative Thal would like to have, that's a great idea.
Yeah, but I just wonder, hearing, again, some concerns. Can you change this bill before it goes for a vote tomorrow to address some of these issues?
I could do floor amendments, but I know that the people that don't like this bill will try their best to say we can't debate this on the floor. Floor amendments are something this serious rarely work. I think if we were able to get it through the House as is and go to the Senate, there may be a lot of things we could do there if they'd like to change it. If Representative Thal and other people in the Senate would like to work with me, I would love to amend this so that we can set some state guidelines. My problem with that is that it won't help the people like in the North Country or Representative Thal's area. Specifically, if we have a state-sanctioned program that has to go through approval processes, you're going to have to get a group large enough to provide needles in all of these small towns in New Hampshire. And that's not going to happen. We've got many groups, and I've got at least a half a dozen groups right now, and one that I'm working with included, that are trying to that would do this in recovery centers and other areas, and not just for giving syringes, but wraparound services, which we could talk about later.
Sure, and that's that first point of contact that Laura Byrne talked about. How about you, Chief Shigori, if you could just, sit down this afternoon and rewrite this thing, addressing some of the concerns that you and Representative Thal expressed. What would this look like? What would be better?
It would look like Vermont's, where you are only able to possess dirty needles if you're part of the program. Vermont also requires an exchange. It's not just – you're not just getting needles. You're exchanging them. I agree that –
you got to turn them in other words.
You have to turn them in to get a clean one, although some people see other ones. There is another option, though. It's not just having to be a fixed location. I believe some places have looked at like mobile. So to serve the North Country, which I think has one of the largest opioid addiction problems in the on per capita in the state, they could probably be served through a mobile one that sets up in this town this day or something like that.
Which kind of makes sense given rural areas and access and so forth. Go ahead, Chief.
I think it makes sense, but I think you have to have that sort of standards for the training, standards for the safety of the people that are volunteering, standards for what they're going to be giving out for information. This bill is written, allows anybody to possess them, and anybody could set up something saying that they're a exchange program.
So are you worried that drug dealers might actually do this?
I'm worried that good-intended people may just decide to do this on their own and jeopardize their own safety, the safety of the people working with them, because they're not going to have necessarily the training on how to deal with sharps, necessarily the training on how to protect themselves from the diseases that maybe with some of these exchange needles. I mean, that's where the safety comes in, and they may set up places that may not be ideal locations for this sort of thing. So I think you need some basic guidelines. You can't just let it go and say, go forth and have at it. And that's what this bill allows. You could set up on Main Street, open your trunk and say, I'm a needle exchange now. I don't think that's going to happen. But this bill is so broadly worded, it has no guidelines at all.
A little more oversight. And Laura Byrne, everybody's been talking about Vermont, so I definitely want to go to you. But I have to let you quickly just jump in there, Representative Hand. And that's the concern that we're hearing, that just anybody could come in and do this.
It's a valid concern, but we have to look at, you know, whether programs like Vermont's program will work for New Hampshire. It's working well in parts of Vermont, but those programs are not everywhere they need to be in Vermont. Every state that has state guidelines and even state-funded programs or just private programs or the combination, they don't have enough. Places all over the world realize, and states all over the country and countries all over the world realize that as bad as the problem is with addiction, access to clean needles is the number one thing that can reduce the incidence of HIV and hepatitis C. And, I mean, even countries like Iran do this.
Well, Laura Byrne, everybody's got Vermont envy this morning and saying that you're the model. What would you change about your approach if you could? And by the way, do addicts have to turn in their needles to get another one? Is there a direct, you know, one-to-one exchange there?
We do not have a one-to-one exchange. And I wanted to mention, we're not, I just wanted to correct a point that I said earlier, we're not state-run, we're state-funded, and we follow state guidelines. But it's the aid service organizations in Vermont that run the exchanges. And if we could change anything about that, we would actually open more exchanges. It's all a question of funding. People, our exchange does not have a one-to-one policy. We actually encourage people to take more needles than they need themselves to do in order to do secondary exchange, to get syringes out to people that are too afraid to come to the exchange.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. So
we also give Sharps containers to our clients and encourage them to bring back their needles in the Sharps containers, and they do.
So they can be disposed of safely. So it's not a one-to-one. You're actually giving addicts more needles than they might need to share with others who might be too afraid to come on in.
We are.
You know, you said that you are state-funded. What do you think about Representative Hannon's comments that when things are state-funded, first of all, it's hard to get through the legislature, but second of all, it's not enough. You don't have the flexibility to set up something like a mobile unit.
Well, I agree. Actually, there is a mobile unit. There's one of the aid service organizations, Vermont Cares, that has a mobile unit, and they have set up in Barrie once a week. So you can have it's under state sanctions to be able to have a mobile exchange as well. And I agree with Representative Hannon, though. I think that everything moves so slowly in New Hampshire. It's critical to decriminalize the possession of needles. That's the very first thing necessary to be able to even think about syringe exchanges. And I think that if they can go ahead and do that as soon as possible, that would be great.
Let's go to the phones, all of you. Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Kathy's joining us from Concord. Hi, Kathy. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, Kathy. Go ahead.
Sorry. I'm on the road, so it's a little hard. I'm just curious about the whole needle exchange, how it works with the addicts. In other words, they're talking about how some addicts are so desperate for a hit that they'll knowingly use a needle from someone who's infected. How are they going to, like, detach that addiction to say, hey, I'm going to go to the needle exchange and pick up a clean needle?
So, Kathy, yeah, if someone's that desperate, sounds like she's saying Laura Byrne and her phone was running out there, but it sounds like she's saying if somebody's so desperate that they might use a dirty needle, how do you even get to them when you're at the needle exchange center?
Well, they're not so desperate all the time. Maybe they're so desperate during that one moment that they choose to use a dirty needle, but most people that actually use other people's needles regret it later, and they if they had access to clean needles, they wouldn't be using other people's needles. Some of those people do come to the syringe exchange. I've had people tell me that they have used syringes that they knew were used by people with hepatitis C. But they have accessed the syringe exchange, and we are trying to help them, and we do test them and try to refer them to medical treatment, mental health treatment, and treatment for substance misuse.
So you're agreeing in one sense with our caller that, you know, not every single time somebody comes in, they say, yes, please, Laura, get me into treatment. But there are those moments.
Yes.
Let's take another call. This is Amanda from Manchester. Hi, Amanda. Go ahead. You're in the exchange.
Hi. I had a question for Representative Hannon.
Go ahead, Amanda.
My question is, and thanks for taking my call. My question is, did anyone on the committee present an amendment, considering that they have all these concerns and they have all these suggestions for how the bill could be amended? Did anyone present an amendment?
No, they did not.
Okay, thanks for letting me know.
Thank you very much.
Amanda, you sound like you have an interest in this.
Yeah, well, I'm also a legislator and I'm a co-sponsor on the bill. And I don't want to be rude or point fingers, but I think it's a pretty standard tactic in the State House when you just don't like a bill, then you come up with a bunch of problems in the bill and you don't solve them. You say, oh, this won't work, that won't work, here's all these things. And then you just walk away, and it's just a standard tactic to kill a bill.
And
I think if someone really, really actually supported this idea, they'd present an amendment, take the time to work on it, and get the bill passed.
Okay. And this is Amanda Bolden, I'm guessing, state representative,
yep.
Democrat from Manchester. So you're supportive of this approach that Representative Hannon has?
Absolutely.
And questioning if opponents really just have concerns, why didn't they try to fix the bill instead of voting against it?
Yep.
Okay. All right, Amanda, thanks for calling in. Do you want to jump in, Representative Hannon?
Yeah, I think that one thing that is certain is we know that reduction in harmful behaviors is possible. The National Institutes of Health did a study that showed a reduction in risky behaviors as high as 80% in injecting drug users. So we know that people can lower their chances of risky usage and behaviors. We saw this in the 80s and 90s with prostitution. There was a big push for when AIDS first became a big problem that, oh, we have to encourage sex workers to use prophylactics. And we're seeing the exact same thing now that people saw then. Oh, you can't encourage the usage of condoms because that'll lead to more people using prostitutes. Well, if that's what's keeping you from going to a prostitute is not having a condom, there's other issues going on. But it's basically about harm reduction. We want to see, the behavior's already happening. We want to see it done safely. And there's a lot of reasons. And some of these are valid concerns. I don't completely disagree that with even some of the chief's concerns or Representative Thal's. But I think we have to look at the overall consequences of not doing something immediate, not doing something all-encompassing and something broader than what other states have done also.
Chief Shigori, we've done tons and tons of programs, obviously, on this whole opioid epidemic. And one of the issues that I've heard police mention is that, and addicts mention too, is that moment of arrest, when the handcuffs come on, that's often the moment when people say, all right, I need to stop this spiral. And I wonder how you think this bill would affect that moment.
And I agree. That's one of my concerns with the bill is that sometimes that's a tool that gets people into the drug court programs, into the recovery programs. It's that awakening that they have a problem they have to address. And taking that away, not everybody's going to come to that same realization. But if you look at the Vermont model again, the way they get – they're only going to get arrested if they're not part of the program. If they're part of the program, showing that they're willing to take some steps to – they want to get harm reduction. They want to reduce their risk of contracting these diseases. Then they're going to get passed. They're going to get a pass. They won't get arrested. But I think arrest sometimes is what wakes people up to that they do have a problem and they have to address it.
Well, Representative Hale, I'll let you jump in just a moment. And more of your questions and comments after a short break. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at a bill to allow needle exchange programs to operate in the Granite State and some of the questions around it. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests for the hour are Laura Byrne, Executive Director of the HIV-HCV Resource Center, which also runs a needle exchange program in White River Junction, Vermont. With us in studio, Chief Andrew Shigori, Tuftonboro Police Chief, Second VP for the New Hampshire Association of Chiefs of Police, and also also with us, Representative Joe Hannon, Republican from Lee. He's a member of the Joint Task Force for the Response to the Opioid Epidemic and sponsor of the bill we're looking at, 1681, which would legalize needle exchange programs in the state. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And all of you, before we go back to our listeners, Representative Hannon, I did want your thoughts on the question I asked Chief Shaguri, which is, a lot of addicts say the moment those handcuffs, you know, went on, that moment of arrest, that's what's really putting them on the path to recovery, that sort of deep-sinking feeling that this has gone way, way, way too far. And the concern is that this bill, by decriminalizing small amounts of drugs left in a needle turned in, would make that moment less possible. I wonder what you think.
I don't doubt that there may be a few people that won't get into medical treatment because of law enforcement efforts. The problem is one of the only things that New Hampshire has is arresting them for their own good. There are very few other options available. This would actually increase private and medical options to get people into treatment. People are five times more likely to enter a drug treatment plan than those not in an exchange program, whether it's formal or not. We have exchange programs in New Hampshire that are not legal. I don't know any particulars, but this is what I've been told. This whole movement of exchange programs started with illegal underground exchanges. And we heard Laura Byrne talk about giving needles to people in the hopes that they get distributed through the secondary market. That happens in Philadelphia. There's a lot of people in Philadelphia that come in and they might be users themselves or homeless people, and they collect hundreds of syringes and then they go sell them to the addicts. That secondary illegal method is actually a way to get needles to where the exchange programs can't get to. So even if we set up a state-sanctioned or approved exchange, that's not even going to be enough. We need to get to the people that won't come in. Currently, they can go to a pharmacy and get up to 10 without a prescription. Most people I talked to that are in recovery didn't even know that was the case. They were getting their needles in Vermont or in Massachusetts when they were getting their drugs. So we have to expand all options, especially in a rural place, if we don't want to see an epidemic like they've had in places like Indiana, which had an explosion of HIV in just a few small areas. One county in particular had over 156 HIV cases in 6 months.
Because of
IV drug use in a very small town. I think I forget the exact number, 4,000 or 5,000 people.
Yeah, that made national news.
They're actually going to be coming here next month to talk about that epidemic and how it's going to relate directly to New Hampshire. We're prime for exactly that scenario happening. Once those counties got specific needle exchange exemptions from the governor, who was against it, by the way, for the longest time, those incidents of HIV went from 25 new cases a week down to 2 new cases a week very rapidly. But their state program is contingent upon being reauthorized every 12 months, and the legislature's got to approve it. We have to get these through election years and election cycles, and it's not very popular sometimes. We have to be able to allow the people that want to do this to do it.
Well, Laura, I have a question for you. How does a needle exchange program help, if at all, with fears about needles left lying around in public parks or on public sidewalks? You know, this is a big concern in some of New Hampshire's cities. What have you seen in Vermont, Laura?
Well, in White River, we don't have much of a problem with needles being left around. Most people do return their needles to the exchange, and we do give out Sharps containers to so they can put them inside and return them in the container, and it's a safe exchange that way. I think generally injection drug users are very careful about what they do with their needles. Some of them have children and families. They don't want to leave their needles lying around in parks where people can step on them or touch them, and I think that actually areas that have syringe exchanges have fewer needles that are left on the street than areas that don't.
Well, joining us now on the phone is someone who has been thinking a lot about that issue specifically. Tim Soucy is on the line. He's Manchester's public health director. And Tim Soucy, welcome to The Exchange. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So what are you seeing, Tim, in terms of dirty needles in Manchester?
Yeah, you know, between the city's health department and AMR, our 911 provider, I think we've picked up over 600 needles around the city over the past year. Public sidewalks, parks, playgrounds, you know, private residences on the lawn. So just about everywhere. So it's certainly an issue in the city.
So, and parks especially, you don't want kids picking those things up or somebody's dog stepping on them.
Yeah, I mean, we actually went through the initiative of notifying every Little League, soccer league, anyone who uses these public parks. We put together a protocol on what they should do in case they identify them. You know, the last thing we want is not only a child to accidentally be stuck, but someone trying to do the right thing and picking it up and accidentally be stuck.
So what do you tell people who, you know, maybe walking the dog in the park or at a baseball game or whatever? What do you tell them if they see a needle?
Yeah, we actually ask them to cover it so that it's not accessible, and to during the day they can call the city's health department and we'll go out and pick them up. After hours on weekends, they can call the fire department and they will dispatch, you know, an ambulance that's not in service to go out and pick them up.
So don't touch it yourself.
No, definitely not. That's the last thing we want.
Wow. How much do you think people are getting that message? I mean, a lot of folks,
I think they are. We get calls almost daily to pick needles and syringes up around the city. So I think people are afraid of what they're seeing and would rather have, you know, a professional come and pick it up safely.
So from a public health perspective, especially protecting the public from, you know, a needle possibly contaminated with hepatitis C, for example, what would the benefits of a needle exchange program be?
Well, there's certainly plenty of evidence that demonstrates that needle exchange programs, from a public health standpoint, help reduce the rates of hep C and HIV transmission. So certainly, from a public health standpoint, there are real benefits to reducing the spread of disease in a community.
Among addicts?
Yes.
What about the general public? Would a needle exchange program, Tim, decrease the number of needles lying around or increase it? What do you think?
You know, I believe that it would decrease the number of needles being left around. You know, I think, as you probably talked about, it's a felony to have a needle with residue in it right now or use drugs in it right now. So, you know, the last thing someone who's injecting wants to do is to be charged with a felony, and they certainly are, you know, getting rid of the needles as quickly as they can. So I think an exchange, you know, would help reduce that number of needles that we're finding around the city.
Okay. Well, Tim, thank you very much. I know you're a busy guy.
It's my pleasure.
That's Tim Soucy. He's Manchester's public health director. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And all of you, let's go back to our listeners. Heather's in Lebanon. Hi, Heather. Go ahead. You're in the exchange.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
So I'm calling in because I'm a huge proponent of this bill, and I actually testified alongside Representative Hannon and Laura. And by the way, you guys are doing great work, and I am so appreciative of what you're doing. I know one of the concerns that has come up is how will this be funded? And my organization, Recover Together, has come forward to say that we are happy to fund this program because we know what the public health benefits are. And we also know that people are more likely to get into treatment if they have access to a needle exchange program.
So, Heather, you work at Recover Together. That's a nonprofit. Sounds like it's providing treatment and recovery services.
Correct. It's actually a for-profit company, and we have offices throughout New Hampshire, Maine, and soon to be Ohio.
Okay, a for-profit company, and you would be willing to set up a needle exchange if they were made legal here in the Granite State?
Absolutely, yes.
What about some of the concerns that we've heard from law enforcement, including our guest, Chief Shigori, that there aren't enough specifics in terms of, you know, who, what, when, where, why?
Well, I can certainly appreciate it, but again, I think looking to our neighbor in state Vermont and looking to see how they have it arranged, certainly what they have in place is very effective, it's practical, it's accessible, and, you know, I think we really need to look there to formulate our plans moving forward.
So this idea of a card that you wouldn't be prosecuted if you had a card saying, yes, I know I have a needle with a little bit of drugs in it, but I'm part of this needle exchange program, so don't arrest me. Does that sound reasonable to you, Heather?
Well, I think we would want to look at that. I mean, I think that's one idea. And I think we want to follow the guidelines and the regulations put forth and make sure that whatever we have in place is safe, but also practical, so that people are willing to come and access the syringe program. We don't want there to be barriers. So that's what's most important from our perspective.
Okay. Heather, thanks a lot for calling in. Any comments from you, Chief Shigori, on what Heather has to say that, you know, let's get this going. She's a for-profit in this field. And let's, you know, make sure that doesn't get out of hand.
Well, I think that's all well and good, except that if you don't have any guidelines, anybody could set something up and they would be in competition with this for-profit. So somebody could, like I said, literally open a trunk on their car, and they're not just a secondary market. They are the market now. So I think you have to look at the safety aspects of it too. You want to have people that are – that have – this bill only says that you have to provide them with access – with information about a treatment. And it's kind of ironic when you read it. It says anybody that gives out or sells – any retailer of selling hypodermics has to give out treatment information. Well, that also includes farm supply places. So I don't know why – you know, let's put it on a needle exchange program to give out that information, not any retailer of needles, hypodermic needles. So I think that's where you need to – and I think that's where it should be at, is it should be – and it's not – I hear her going back to Vermont too. That's the key, I think, is to have it some sort of guidelines as to what is a needle exchange, what it constitutes it, what – for the safety of the people volunteering, working there, what training, and so that they're not just handing a phone number of a treatment provider, and that's good enough. Not that I think that will happen with a lot of these. I mean, they're well-intended, they're good people, and I'm sure they're organized, but this also opens it to the unorganized to do it too. And the secondary, like I say, the secondary market is actually could be a primary under this type of this bill. And going back to Amanda Bolden's point, well, hearing these concerns, proponents could have offered some amendments too.
To address
our concerns.
The concerns that you have. Okay, so Representative Hannon, here's your chance to address them, and then we'll go back to our listeners.
No, it's one thing about the exchanges is the requirement to have information about safe disposal and addiction information, if appropriate, is the exact language that's used in the current law. The same thing that these people must provide, private individuals, groups, nonprofits, whoever, is the same that the pharmacist must do currently.
And to hand out needles.
And if pharmacies were the only avenue that was doing this and they were doing and taking back dirty needles, it would be a great thing. But we know and we've heard testimony that a lot of pharmacies don't even participate in the current law because we didn't force it on them. And I'm not trying to – I don't want to force pharmacies to take back or sell needles if they don't want to. In Stratford County, we had somebody testify that there was – they only knew of someone very involved in the recovery community, that there's only one pharmacy in the whole county that participates in supplying syringes without a prescription to people for addicts. That is an extremely high barrier to getting clean needles. Like I said, most people don't even know they can get them here. So we're not really changing anything drastic. We're just saying that if everyone's not going to a pharmacy, we have to meet people where they are. If we have to wait till someone's addiction is bad enough that they finally get a card to go to a treatment program, we've missed a lot of opportunities to get people before they even get to that point.
What guarantees are there in this bill that, you know, some random person wouldn't just set up, like Chief Shigori says, out of their trunk and say, hello, I'm a needle exchange program?
There aren't any. But there also are we also know that the current model of prohibiting certain drugs and things is not working. You know, heroin and fentanyl are highly illegal. They are very easy to get. And the only people in charge of that are the criminals. You know, the fact that this would open it up to private individuals and other groups, it removes the barrier of waiting for the state to do something. And the expanse of what the state will do will absolutely not be enough. So we have to remove these barriers. The number one barrier, and this is the thing that everyone gets upset about, is the residual amount, allowing that amount. We know that a syringe is designed to get rid of the most amount of substance possible. That's how they're made. And
the addict wants to get the most.
The addict does not want to leave
possible.
Anything in there.
Right.
And someone says, oh, what if there's a granule of fentanyl, which could kill somebody, and they reuse it? Well, if there's enough in the tip of a syringe in a needle to kill someone – that needle was probably found next to a dead body from someone who overdosed on that 10 times over before. So these are very rare circumstances. We're hearing a lot of what ifs, but I haven't had any examples of big time drug dealers who have been put away because they found a single dirty syringe with no usable amount in it. It's not happening.
Let's go to Durham, and Michelle's on the line. Hi, Michelle. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Welcome.
Hi. I wanted to ask the chief. He mentioned that sometimes that moment when the handcuffs get slapped on the addict is when they kind of have that moment of, oh, my God, I'm in trouble and I need to get help. So I was wondering how often in the state addicts are getting arrested just for having a needle or a needle and syringe with residual amounts in it, if that's the only reason they're getting arrested.
You know, Michelle, that's a good question. And Chief Shigori, you know, on the books, it says you can't do this. But I do wonder how often police actually haul somebody in for possessing a needle with a trace amount of fentanyl in it.
Probably, I don't have the exact numbers on that. I don't know if anybody does per se. It would take some research through the courts, but
and every case probably has its own.
Every case has its own particulars. I can know that we have a couple times. One was a case of somebody that was on parole for heroin and was still using it, along with other drugs. Sometimes, if we find other drugs, we're not going to go with the needle, obviously. But sometimes it's what got him back into treatment and under the observation of parole. You know, unfortunately, one of the problems is we don't have enough treatment, and especially in our county, we have nothing for residential other than our county jail.
Really? Wow.
Some groups are working on it, but that's kind of the other part of it. If we don't arrest people, they don't go to the drug court. If we don't arrest people, they don't. Sometimes it is the only thing is the needle. Like I said, I think of one or two cases that we've had, but oftentimes it propagates more down the line sometimes with what they may have other places.
Well, very quickly, Laura Byrne, what advice do you have for New Hampshire lawmakers as they get ready to look at this tomorrow?
I'm hoping that everybody will vote to support this bill. I think it's critically important to be able to get needles to injection drug users who are already using them. Anyway, it will reduce the risk of hepatitis and HIV transmission. It will help them. It will help pave the way for syringe exchange. So I'm hoping everybody will vote for it.
Well, we'll see what happens. And we've heard about some of the concerns. And I'm sorry I don't have time to let the two of you jump back in. But all of you, thank you very much for being here. Laura Byrne, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
That's Laura Byrne, again, Executive Director of the HIV-HCV Resource Center in White River Junction, Vermont, which also runs a needle exchange program. Chief Shigori, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
That's Chief Andrew Shigori, Tufton Borough's Police Chief. And Representative Johannan, thank you also for giving us your time.
Thank you very much.
That's Johannan, a Republican representative from Lee and sponsor of the bill we talked about, 1681, which would legalize needle exchange programs. This is The Exchange on NHPR.